Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.
Hello, good evening, and welcome to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Firstly, good evening, John.
Hi, Ben, and hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. Indeed, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. Standard rate supply, that's 087-179-1032. Lots to get through as usual. We will start with what to see in the sky. And John, you can't miss Venus, can you, for a start?
No, I sure cannot. It's brilliant, and I saw it just before I came out. I'll go into that in just a second. Space station back in our skies on St. Patrick's Day evening in the 17th of March till April the 1st. So put that in your diaries just to, if you want to catch evening glimpses of that. Mercury, it's disappearing into the eastern glow of sunrise at the moment. So you're not a really good chance to see that. Be very, very lucky if you do. The two to watch at the moment, Venus and Jupiter. In fact, there are three. Beautiful sight tonight. Venus and Jupiter, two of the brightest planets at the moment, shine boldly in the west, southwest at dusk. And Venus is the lower one and the brighter one. So I'm not sure what time it's going down this evening. It must be fairly close to disappearing.
Venus, is it? Breath now. Yeah, 7 minutes past. Yeah. 7 minutes past eight is sunset. Venus set time in Dublin this evening, yes.
And following that, we have Jupiter, which will go down an hour or so after that.
About half past nine, yes.
And then we have Mars virtually overhead at the moment. It's a brilliant thing to see as well. It's got its little orange glow. And it shines very high towards the south in the early evening, so it's whizzing through the skies towards the west at the moment, almost overhead, and it moves lower towards the west as the evening grows late. Saturn, unfortunately, out of sight at the moment. It's in conjunction and behind the sun, so you want to be a very brave person to try and see through the sun on that one. Uranus and Neptune, 5.8 and 8 in the scale. Very, very difficult to see. You do need a good pair of binoculars or indeed a very, very good telescope to see those as well. So the three to watch out, fantastic to see them all in a line, Venus, Jupiter and Mars, which is really good.
Neptune's on more or less on that same line too, but Neptune is not exactly easy to see.
Mm-hmm. Saturn is actually just a little bit lower than Venus, but it disappears rather quickly. So that's it. Now, what about this comet?
Indeed. Well, now I had another attempt to try to find it. Yes, it is fading rapidly. Mm-hmm. It was quite much brighter some time ago, but we had a clear night in Dublin last night.
Yep.
I went out again. I was in suburban, light polluted suburban skies, and I knew exactly where it was, where it should be, which is very close to. Actually, tonight is very close to Aldebaran. We give you a point if you don't know where Aldebaran is. We give you a pointer to that in a moment. But I knew it was between, if you draw a line between Aldebaran and Mars, and then halfway between that and a bit to the left from our vantage point here. Mm. And as I swept that area with my 15 by 70 binoculars, I couldn't catch it. Now, just to, as I mentioned, it's a bit nearer to Aldebaran this evening. So, how to find that? If you know, I think most people probably know Orion. And the belt of Orion, those three stars in a line that, well, actually, if you continue an imaginary line down to the down and left of it, you'll come to Sirius, the dog star, which is the brightest star in the sky. Anything brighter than that is a planet or the moon or the sun. And but if you continue that line from the Orion's belt up and to the right, the next bright star you'll see is Aldebaran in Taurus. Actually, if you continue that line, you'll see the Pleiades star cluster. But that Aldebaran, and then above Aldebaran, the next brightest object straight up from it is Mars, which is quite high up. So if you're looking for the comet this evening, it's near Aldebaran. But
it's right beside it, actually. So
I might try and give it another go this evening, but by the time I get out of here and home-ish, the moon will be up, I think. Actually, I'm going to check the moon times now. Oh, no, it's not up. Actually, because we're coming towards new moon, the moon won't be rising till 4 a.m., but more of that anon.
Yeah, just to prove, to show how quickly it has been moving through the sky, the 29th of January, it was very close to the North Star Polaris, and now it's, it really is moving, this thing. So next couple of days, we're just going to miss it totally. So tonight, if it's clear, and it was before it came out, and if it's clear this evening, I'll give it a bash as well in my 50 by 10 binoculars. Or might even get...
Your 10 by 50, I presume, as opposed to 50 by 10.
I did try it during the week as well, like yourself, but again, it's just amazing. It's just one of those elusive comets with a green tail. If you had a camera with a big wide view, you could probably take a photograph of on a longer exposure and try and catch it, but it's quite large, really, and it has a big tail both sides, and it's sort of a greeny colour, they say. So I think it'd be worth a watch, just looking at its path here. But so it's it's flaking past Aldebaran this evening, and tomorrow it's on its merry way for another 50,000 years before it comes back. Mm. Can't wait for that one.
Thank you, John, for that. Just getting back to the moon, as I mentioned, it's not up at the moment from any vantage point here in Ireland, but it will rise tomorrow after 4 a.m. tomorrow morning, early tomorrow morning, and it will be due south just before 8 a.m. tomorrow morning, and at that stage it will be a 32% waning crescent moon, and it'll set then just after 11 a.m. tomorrow. As I mentioned, we're on our way to heading towards new moon, which will be on next Monday the 20th at 7 a.m. rather, to be precise. And the sun rises tomorrow in Dublin at 7:43 a.m., which is 14 minutes earlier than a week ago, and then local noon when the sun is due south will be at 12:39 p.m. And the sunset times and civil twilight times, they're all 12 to 14 minutes later than a week ago, and they are, well, the sun will set at 25 minutes to 6 tomorrow evening, and from then until about 10 past 6 we'll have civil twilight, and from then until 10 minutes to 7 or so we'll have nautical twilight, and from then until 7:30, we'll have astronomical twilight, and from then on, we'll have it'll officially be nighttime. So we mentioned the comet. Still, I haven't found it, and I mentioned, of course, earlier when we were talking about the planets, about the line of planets, and we mentioned Neptune. It's very hard to see, but it will on Wednesday the 25th. That's tomorrow. No, it's not tomorrow. It's the following week. I think that should be the 15th. Wednesday the 15th. That's my typo because I wrote this. Venus and Neptune will be 1 degree apart. And next Sunday we'll have Venus and Jupiter 10 degree apart. That'll just help you. Might help you find Jupiter, but Jupiter is still, as you mentioned, John, quite still bright.
It is. Ish. Yeah.
And also on Sunday, somebody's birthday. Well, do you remember Polish astronomer Nicholas Copernicus? We've heard of him. Anybody in the astronomy world will have heard of him. Mm-hmm. But he was born 550 years ago on that day in 1473. Of course, he was the guy who first suggested, much to the dismay of the church, that the sun was at the center of the universe. Well, of course, he got that part wrong. But rather than, up until then, it was believed, a good reason too, because observationally everything seems to revolve around the earth from our vantage point here, the moon, the sun, and the stars. But he came up with this idea that it was the sun. The planets were going around the sun, not the whole universe going around the Earth. And I think that published, which I can't remember the name for off the top of my head now, I think he waited until he was on his deathbed, because it was a very heretical type of a postulation, shall we say, to suggest such a thing. The church would have had his guts for garters.
Yeah, and for those of you feeling a little starry-eyed tonight, it's probably because it's Valentine's night.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, there you go. So if you see a few extra stars flickering, that's what it is. It's the help.
Love.
Yep,
from Cuba.
There you go, the love.
Pass me the bucket.
Yep, okay. Here it is. Now, Antarctica. Antarctica is a tough place to work for obvious reasons. Bitterly cold, remote and wild, however, it's one of the best places in the world to hunt for meteorites. And that's partly because Antarctica is a desert, of course, and its dry climate limits the degree of weathering, and this is of the meteorite's experience. So last December, a team went out in minus 10 degrees, because it's sort of summery down there at this stage, and the international team of researchers who just got back from Antarctica's cold and arid deserty place can attest to the continent's meteor hunter friendliness when they returned with 5 new meteorites, including one that weighs 16.7 pounds in the old language or 7.6 kilos in the modern metric language. And there's a big photograph on the internet of them lying beside a big meteorite. Now, I would have thought that as that came through the atmosphere, it would have hit the surface and sunk. So we're not sure how old that is, because we were just discussing before we came in there, the natural progression of the wind and the ice would drag it down a bit and then push it back up again. So seemingly, over the last number of years, we've found 45,000 meteorites recovered from Antarctica over the past century. So it's quite a lot, and this one was a big one, and there was 5 other ones, or there were 5 other ones as well, and they're going to do an analysation. Is that a good word for you?
What's wrong with analysis?
Analysis, they're going to be analysed, yeah, in the Royal Belgian Institute of Natural Sciences, and that'll be quite fun to see that. You have a bit of a meteorite, you've seen one as well, it's a piece of moon rock as well.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think this was slightly bigger than the little meteorite that you have.
Well, the gift I was given.
Yes, it was.
Just a tiny piece, but
yeah,
it was in the museum in, I think it was New York, and they have a huge iron meteorite, the size of a fridge, bigger, I'd say, a big hole in the middle. I think it was a couple of tons, and it landed somewhere in Africa many, many years ago. But just thinking about Antarctica, of course, they're very difficult. Well, normally, of course, a meteorite, it doesn't have the meteorite stamped on it. A lot of them look like ordinary rocks and stones. But, of course, when you see one in Antarctica, and the land mass of Antarctica is, most of it's covered by over a kilometre of ice. So if you see a rock on top of the ice, you think, where did that come from? That had to come from up above. But sometimes they don't, because of the shifting ice, the meteorites could have landed in Antarctica thousands of years ago and then got buried in snow and ice, and then between the moving ice, like tectonic plates, they can resurface again at some time, and they mightn't be discovered until thousands of years after they have landed. But not in this case.
No, indeed not. And meteoroid or asteroid hunters are continuously looking for trails and trying to follow the path of where the larger ones would possibly land. And they've spotted 3 predicted impacts that have occurred in the last 12 months, which is an encouraging illustration of how asteroid detection capabilities are rapidly approaching. So, on 12th of February 23, the new asteroid, which is called 2023 CX1, but it does have a designated SAR 2667 by its discoverer, and was imaged by the Piscataquis Observatory, and it gave us a once-a-second observation, and it was reported to the Minor Planet Center, and this is where the report all of these at 2049 UTC. Where's UTC against us? Doesn't
Universal?
Yeah. How many minutes of difference are there?
No, we are on. Well, in wintertime we're on. Like now.
Yeah.
We're in UTC, and in summertime we're UTC plus 1 hour.
Yeah. So about 20 past eight on UTC on the 12th of February.
20 past eight. In
so
the
they're
evening.
Busy at the moment trying to find out where this particular one they think landed or broke up and went into splinters. So they're following the impact corridor over the channel with a trajectory going from west to east. And this particular object continued to be observed until just 10 minutes before the impact. So this was a biggie. So they got a good trail of this, so they know roughly where it is, because it's very, very difficult to determine where these things. I've seen a couple in the last few weeks that are, they feel like they land right beside us in the garden next door, but they're about 60 kilometers up, so, and then they flake in for 3 or 4 seconds and then out again. These were particularly large ones, the biggest ones that I've probably seen, but where they would have landed, and I didn't hear of anything.
It's anybody. Very, I saw a good fireball many years ago, and I thought it looked as though it landed about 3 fields over.
No.
But it was, it landed in the North Sea, and it, but it's, wow, that's very close. I think I'll go looking for it. But, it wasn't to be. That small asteroid you mentioned, it was only sort of a meter or so in
the diameter. Yeah,
spotted at the last moment. Mm-hmm. But so it wouldn't have even, of course, they, it wasn't too long before they discovered there was a 100% chance of impact, and indeed it did, as you mentioned.
Yeah, uh-huh.
But if something comes in 10 times that, it's, or 100 times that.
Yeah.
Which do you reckon someday, sooner or later?
Yeah, once every 100 years. The last one, I think, was the one that whizzed in Tunguska in
1908, I think, not mistaken.
Yeah, and that was up in Siberia. So they reckon one big one every 100 years. And we got a close one in Chelyabinsk a number of years back, which destroyed a few windows and doors and a few buildings here and there. So.
And a lot of people got injured. Well, mostly from flying glass. They were inside wind, and they were looking out the window at it, and then the sonic boom, the... Basically, it came in so fast that the when it pushed the air in front, it caused a massive pressure wave of air.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, the windows couldn't withstand that. And a lot of glass came in on a lot of people. And that's how they got good. But it's great. There's plenty of dash cam footage, isn't there, on the internet?
Huge,
I'm sure you've seen
of dash cam. Everybody seems to have that. And they just happen to be in the right place at the right time, which is... which is great for this as well. China's gigantic telescope. They're great names for telescope now. They're very large ones and super large ones and middle ones and all sorts of things. But this particular one is 500 meters across in its aperture. It's a spherical radio telescope known as FAST. And it's in the Jizhou province of China near the city of Pingtang. And it's situated in a natural depression surrounded by hills. It's a fantastic looking thing. It almost looks like the Arecibo one as well. So it just was placed into a big curry lake without water. So it has seemingly identified over 740 pulsars at this stage. No further information on this at the moment, but no doubt we will get flickers of information coming through into our sort of area of the internet world.
Thank you, John. You're listening to the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM with John Dixon and myself, Ben Emmett. Our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie, and the text and WhatsApp number is 087-179-1032. And I see Saudi Arabia, they're going to send their first woman into space. And, of course, this is a move by the kingdom as they try, that's just the kingdom of Saudi Arabia, try and revamp their image when it comes to women in society over there. And her name is Yayani Barnami, and she will join her fellow Saudi, I should say, Ali Al-Qarni, as she'll be on, they'll both be on a 10-day mission to the International Space Station. They will fly aboard a ISS, onto the ISS, aboard a SpaceX Dragon spacecraft as part of a mission in the spring by the private space company Axiom Space, SPA. Also on board will be Peggy Whitson. Remember that name? Mm-hmm. Yes, she's a former NASA astronaut. This is a private kind of enterprise. She doesn't work for NASA anymore. She was actually the first female commander, I believe, of the International Space Station. And she also had, cumulatively, I think she's spent more time in space than probably any other woman, or certainly any other American woman. This will be her fourth flight to the ISS, and the other person on board will be John Schaffner. He's a businessman from Tennessee, and he's going to serve as the pilot, and they're going to be launched on a SpaceX Falcon 9 rocket from Kennedy Space Center in Florida. So we have Saudi Arabia. They'll be following in the footsteps of their neighbors up there in the United Arab Emirates. I'm all tongue-tied today, which was about 4 years ago, John, 2019. Yes, it was, when they became the first Arab country to send one of its citizens into space. I'm going to leave you to the next story now, because I keep getting tongue-tied, and yeah, I can't put a sentence together without tripping over myself.
This is a really weird one, actually. It's, could the moon dust keep the Earth cool? So this is the new thing they're looking into at the moment, because of the global warming, etc., and they're looking to mine some moon dust and sprinkle it into space between us and the sun, and to a particular gravity point between the Earth and the sun to temper the ravages of global warming. So how well this will work is in a huge debate at the moment, and they're looking for all sorts of ideas for filtering solar radiation to keep the Earth from overheating at the moment. So this is a new study that's going on as well, but the persistent failure to draw down planet-warming greenhouse gas emissions, as we know, has pushed once fanciful geoengineering schemes towards the center stage in the climate policy. So even by blocking 1 or 2% of the sun rays is all it would take to lower the Earth's surface by a degree or two in Celsius. And that's roughly the amount it has warmed over the last century, which is not that much when you think about it, but it's still,
it doesn't sound a lot.
No, it doesn't. It's still
apparently
quite,
it's doing a lot of ecological damage.
Yeah, so it's, they say it would be cheap, and scientists know how it works because of the major volcanic eruptions back here on Earth, blocking out sunlight, etc. as well. So it is a thing, but there are serious potential side effects, including this, the disruption of rain patterns upon which millions depend for growing food. So there's a huge debate, and one that I've just become more interested in just to see what happens, but I can't really see that coming to fruition at this stage. So we just keep an eye on that one. So there we are. Could moon dust keep the Earth cool? Yeah.
That's an interesting answer. Another option.
Mm-hmm.
Alan Inkildare said it's clear over there.
Good. Yes.
You see
yes,
two planets
sitting
in the west there?
Yeah. Two of them on that would be Jupiter and Mars. Mars is just overhead. That orange color as well. So, and don't forget,
I think Mars is, that'll be up till about 4 a.m., if I'm not mistaken.
It'll be up till about 4 a.m. And the elusive comet is very close to it. Just look up towards Aldebaran, which is a little bit further on than that. Sort of in a big cluster of stars. You won't miss it because it's quite bright. Now, I got this earlier on today, and it's about the mysterious Russian satellite that broke up early last month in January, creating a cloud of debris. And they reckon the breakup in January the 3rd generated at least 85 pieces of trackable debris. Now, why did it break up, we wonder? And it's up quite high at this stage. It's 726 miles, and it's way, way above the International Space Station, in fact, nearly double that. And they did not speculate about the cause of the breakup, and that's far from the mysteries that surround the cosmos. And I suppose we'll get to know about this as well. So they reckon it could take a long, long time for it to come back down with the gravitational pull of the Earth to sort of burn up and things. So they've got to keep an eye on all those bits and pieces. There's 85 fairly large bits of a Russian satellite that was launched way back in May 2014 across atop a Russian rocket vehicle, along with three Rodnik military communication satellites as well. So whether it hit something up there or something hit it, we just don't know at this stage. And there have been a couple of satellite collisions with defunct satellites over the last number of years as well, producing more satellite and junk and debris and everything that they have to keep an eye on, sometimes having to move the International Space Station and astronauts in from their spacewalks to stop them getting damaged. And one other thing, Ben, we saw as well, there's a photograph of the little hole that was punched into the side of the International Space Station. And I caught this earlier on today as well.
Was this in the car, not so much the space station itself, but the Russian...
It's the Russian side, this, the Russians,
module. The module. Not the module, the, the Progress cargo ship.
Yeah, it's a pretty detailed photograph as well. And it's a tiny little pinhole. It's like a little piece of lead that just did that, but it was enough to cause a little leak. So they reckon it was a little meteorite just hitting the skin and puncturing the craft. So a little bit of sellotape required there.
Thank you, John. I saw that craft. So that's two Russian. They reckon they have a little hole in the Soyuz one, which is going to be planned anyway to use to bring down three of the astronauts on board. This one is not so much of a problem on the Progress cargo ship, because at the moment that's full of rubbish and garbage, and the plan is just to undock that from the space station and send it into the atmosphere to burn up. So that's not a big deal. But the other one on the Soyuz now, I don't know whether they've decided for definite to send up a fresh one. They probably will, won't they?
I would imagine they would, yeah.
Yeah, they won't take any chances at all. Just going back to Saudi Arabia, I mentioned that the United Arab Emirates in 2019 became the first Arab nation to send one of its citizens into space. And that was, I don't remember the name now, but his name was Hazal Al-Mansouri. Oh, I do remember him now. He spent 8 days on the ISS, and he became known as the Sultan of Space. And, they're trying to do their best down there. Alan wants to know, is it the equivalent of sports washing? Is it space washing? Anyway, that remains to be seen, because, as you know, imagine this, John, since only 2017... Imagine, women have been allowed to drive in Saudi Arabia. I find this amazing. But anyway, that's another subject that hasn't got to do with astronomy, but it just amazes me. They're now allowed to drive, and they can go. They don't have to be accompanied everywhere by a chaperone, male chaperone.
There we go. Just before we go.
Is it that time?
It is indeed. Jupiter, just going back to that again. I normally mention the time of when the great red spot would appear. Now, we just missed it today, the 14th, at 4:50 p.m. And it would have gone at this stage. But the next time it's going to appear at a semi-reasonable time is 6:29 p.m., which is a good one because it's just dark at that stage, on the 16th, in 2 days' time. And the 18th again at 8:09. So that roughly appears in our vision for approximately 45 minutes or so before it disappears, and it's a lovely sight to see, is the great red spot. Now, I've been very lucky. Every time I've looked up, I have seen it.
But you're going to need a small scope for that.
I use normally about a 12mm. You will get to see it with the 25mm lens, and the 9mm is even better.
Well, it depends on your size of your mirror.
That's
lens.
Very true.
And I have an 8-inch.
It's a pretty good view to see as well, and it's one of these big storms that's whizzing around at 450 miles an hour. You get three Earths into it, and it's been doing that for hundreds of years.
A storm that goes on for hundreds of years. It sounds like something meta in the love. Don't forget, our email address is astronomy@dublincityfm.ie. Thank you, John, for your news items. And yes, Alan, the comet did get my tongue there a few times this evening. But thanks to James Sweeney and to Conor Lennon also, and for the people who put this show up as a podcast here on the station. And you can get it, of course, wherever you get your podcasts. But that's all from me, Ben Emmett, for this edition of the Astronomy Show here on 103.2 Dublin City FM. Up next, it's Hello China. 9 o'clock, it's Bren Lynott with Threads. And 11 p.m, it's Ear to the Globe with Nigel Woods, followed at midnight by After Hours, Dave Barry's mix of jazz, blues and soul. He goes on till 2 a.m. But please join myself and John at the same time next week. We'll be here with all the latest news from around the universe. Until then, take care of each other. Thank you for listening. Say goodnight, John.
Good night, John.
Happy Valentine's Day, you lovers.
Broadcasting on 103.2, this is Dublin City FM.